If you're looking for a trip full of the extraordinary and unexpected, then you need to get off the beaten path and head to Missouri. The City Museum in St. Louis has got to be one of the coolest places that I have ever been. But it's just one of many wonders found in Missouri. You can play a chess game at the World Chess Hall of Fame, also home to the world's largest chess piece. You can tour a reimagined ghost town brought back to life as outdoor art at Red Oak 2 in Carthage. Or go on a crazy underwater adventure at Bonterre Mine, one of the world's largest man-made caverns and freshwater scuba diving resorts. Or throw back craft beers 50 feet underground at O'Malley's Pub in Weston. Missouri is a place full of surprise and delight. Don't miss out on Missouri, because whether it is weird, wondrous, or the world's largest, there is an MO for every traveler in Missouri. Find yours at visitmo.com.
When was the last time I took a road trip? How many national parks could I hit in 2 weeks? What about hotels? Wait, hey, Erica, how much am I spending on travel?
When your questions about life turn into questions about money, there's Erica, the virtual financial assistant to help you spend, save, and plan smarter. Only from Bank of America. What would you like the power to do? Erica is only available in the English language. You must download the latest version of the mobile banking app, only available on select mobile devices. Your chat may be recorded and monitored for quality assurance. Message and data rates and additional terms may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This week on our show, we've been talking about trees. We have been basically sending love letters to trees. We really did run an episode a couple of days ago where we actually wrote love letters to trees. Don't make fun of us. Listen, trees are great. We love them. Everybody loves trees, except maybe our guest today.
Trees kill, man. Trees kill.
This is Mary Roach, science writer and author most recently of Fuzz, When Nature Breaks the Law. Also, world-known tree hater.
I found 3 reports in the Balinese newspapers of people killed by falling durians. The durian has spikes on it. You know, it's like a big, heavy thing. It's like a medieval weapon that falls on you. And they found the murder weapon right next to the poor guy's body, the bloody durian fruit.
Yeah, I don't think until I read your book that the notion of death by pinecone had ever even crossed my mind. It, like, just the thought of it.
Yeah. There's a pine called the Coulter pine. I like that it, you know, was it named for Ann Coulter? It's like, this is a very big, heavy pine cone. It's like a bowling ball. These pine cones drop down, and if that thing hits you, you're gone. Some of these groves of Coulter pines, they'll put up a sign that says, "Danger, falling pine cones, proceed with caution." I mean,
it would be hard to take seriously until you're lying unconscious on the ground. And then,
exactly.
Unfortunately,
I think, facing that sign, most people will decide to proceed. They're like, it's a pine cone. How bad could it be?
And it's not just falling fruit or pine cones that can kill you. While researching her book, Fuzz, Mary found that between the years of 1995 and 2007, falling trees killed nearly 400 people in the United States. As it turns out, trees like this, trees that want to murder you, have a name.
This is a technical term, danger trees. I was drawn to this just because the term danger tree, it's like danger mitten.
Yeah.
You know, it's like,
yeah.
What do you mean danger tree?
I'm Dylan Thuris, and this is Atlas Obscura, a celebration of the world's strange, incredible, and wondrous places. And today, the great and amazing Mary Roach is taking us deep into an ancient forest grove on Vancouver Island. And we are going in search of danger trees and the people who seek them out and explode them. You cover deadly trees in Fuzz. Maybe you could elaborate on what that means.
They are designated danger trees. So these are trees that usually they're very, very, very old. And because they're very old, they're very, very, very big. We're talking like giant Douglas firs and things like that. And these are trees that spend, you know, of a 800 or 900 year lifespan, a couple hundred years dying slowly, rotting from within. And because they rot from within, you can't really see what's to the naked eye. You'd think that tree looks okay to me. Dun, dun, dun. They, you know, cue the high winds and the big storm, and sometimes they come down. And, you know, when a big tree comes down, that every now and then lands on somebody's tent or somebody's car. And then so these are danger trees. And there's people whose whole job, well, not their whole job, but part of their job, they're danger tree assessors. And they make annual visits to places like Cathedral Grove up in McMillan Provincial Park in British Columbia, where there's a bunch of these big old trees, and they kind of, you know, they check for the signs of decrepitude and rot, and then sometimes suggest taking action, which isn't always cutting the tree down.
Maybe you could kind of set the scene for us. What does McMillan Provincial Park actually look like?
It's these massive, you know, 800-900 year old Douglas firs and other conifers, and they the forest floor is just it's dark there because the trees are so high, so it's dark, it's very wet, it's very green, and you walk around, and you know the term forest floor doesn't feel like a floor. It's like you're walking on old decayed logs and your foot can go through, but I fell over several times. But it's a very nice place to fall because it's very mossy, like thick moss. The trees, the trunks of the trees are all covered in, there's moss on them. It's just beautiful. And there's a lot of wildlife because, you know, old trees, particularly, you know, some of these old partially collapsing trees are great real estate for wildlife. And they're, you know, bears can make dens inside them. You know, the bare branches are great for raptors to perch on. Woodpeckers love them. So it's a great kind of varied wildlife community. But mostly it's just dark and dripping and ferns and mosses. It's that kind of place. Yeah. It's pretty magical.
Those kinds of environments, I always feel like if you tell me that like elves are real, like I'm, like in that environment, I'm like, it seems vaguely plausible, you know?
I'm pretty sure I saw the Keebler elf, the door in the tree. Pretty sure we walked by that.
And you were not just there alone. You were in this cathedral of trees with a couple of other people to do something rather aggressive. Who are you with as you went through this?
I was with this guy, Dean, who was the danger tree assessor. So he's the guy who comes in and he's looking for things like conchs, which are these discs that grow, they're fungus, and they grow out of the exterior of the tree if the inside's rotting. And if you see a conch on the outside, it means the inside's pretty far gone. So he's looking for those. He's looking for signs that the tree is starting to pull up. The earth is lifting on one side. So he's going around doing his sort of checkup. Trees die in stages. This is the, like a tree. You don't often get to use the adjective deader.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
they're
this
dead,
tree is deader than
deader,
that one. Yes.
And then totally dead. So that goes from dead hard. These are official classifications. Dead hard. Dead. I forget if dead soft or dead spongy comes next.
Uh-huh.
Probably dead soft and then dead spongy.
Yeah.
And finally, at a certain point, the tree, you know, just it's so spongy that it loses integrity. It just falls. And then it's on the ground. And that is dead fallen. And now it's no longer a danger tree. It's a log.
Safer when it's a log, I think.
Next on Atlas Obscura.
There's this chainsaw going up, and one of the guy goes, he's actually a falling safety advisor. We had two falling safety advisors on site, and he goes, yeah, there's probably a special knot for this, but we're not going to do it.
the
chainsaw is like
going up
and, you know, it's like sawdust is spraying everywhere.
That's after this.
Yeah. Want to connect with a family member who doesn't speak your language? Then check out the language learning program Rosetta Stone on desktop or as an app. Rosetta Stone is designed to immerse you in the language you're learning through an intuitive process. Plus, the True Accent feature even gives you feedback on your pronunciation. And with a lifetime membership, you have access to all 25 offered languages. Get started today. Visit rosettastone.com/pod50 to get 50% off your lifetime membership now. That's rosettastone.com/pod50 for 50% off.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for up to half the cost. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Savings based on cost of Consumer Cellular single line 1, 5, and 10 gig data plans with unlimited talk and text compared to lowest cost single line postpaid unlimited talk, text, and data plans offered by T-Mobile and Verizon January 2024.
Because these enormous dying trees can fall in such unpredictable ways, they can't just be taken care of by your standard lumberjacking. You can't just go and start whacking them with an axe. So after Dean goes in and identifies which are the trees that need mitigating, then McMillan Grove brings in the high explosives.
That work is done by the Faller Blaster. The Faller Blaster, his name was Daisy Waymer. In this case, and I know Daisy, not a common lumberjack name. It's actually D-A-Z-Y, which comes from his early youth, has to do with weed, not flowers. People are like, why would they blow up these trees? That's terrible. Okay, so what happens? They're not blowing up the whole tree. His job is blowing off the top of these huge trees. And what that does is it makes them lighter. There's less for the wind to catch, so there's less sail on the top, as they say. So there's less motion. They're more stable. It's just buying you time. And because two-thirds of the way up is on one of those trees is way the heck up there. So the average tourist walking through Cathedral Grove will just think, oh, here's another big, giant, beautiful, mossy tree.
Yes.
In order to see the top, the part that's blown off, you have to lean way, way back, which I did, and fell over into the moss. Again, the remedy is to blow off the top of the tree. Now it's not a danger anymore. It can sort of quietly continue to rot without. At a certain point, they'll probably want to take more of it out. But anyway, it buys the tree some time, makes it safer. It also makes it available for wildlife. Because it hollows out from the top, the water gets in, and so it's a nice solution. Makes it safer without turning Cathedral Grove into a bunch of very large stumps.
I like that tourists are walking through this environment, you know, oohing and eyeing this lush, beautiful environment. Little do they know they're standing among these explosively beheaded corpses.
Exactly.
The scene of gruesome death and destruction and little neither would they know. You got to watch Daisy sort of do this for a tree.
Yeah.
This was happening like quite early in the morning, right? You guys were, what time was this when you were there?
It was quite early. We showed up in the morning, probably, I think we all met at 6 a.m., something like that. They try to do it pretty early because they've got to hold up traffic. They've got two flaggers on either side, just making sure nobody's, because it wasn't too far back from the main road. So they're very, very cautious. Yeah.
Did you have like safety gear? Did they like make you wear like hard hats and stuff as you went through this forest?
No. No, I did not. I don't think I had a, no, certainly not walking through. I mean, yeah. I had a great big fluorescent coat only because I come from the Bay Area and I never have enough warm gear and it was cold and drizzling and they're like, what are you wearing? Like a windbreaker? What? Take this coat. So I had like one of them gave me this giant coat. Of course, the pockets are full of wood chips, and but I don't think they again remember wearing a hard hat.
Hmm.
I don't remember. You'd think the falling safety advisor would have maybe. Maybe they did. Maybe I don't remember wearing a hard hat yet. But you're pretty far back from the
maybe
tree.
They figure if a tree falls on you, the hard hat's not going to do you any good. So you
it's exactly because it really isn't. You're just going to snap into.
Yeah, you get pounded into the ground like
it's,
a little.
Yeah, exactly. It's like the seatbelt on a plane. Like,
right.
This isn't really going to help me.
Highly questionable.
What that seatbelt's for? That's for like, you know, if there is a crash, the bodies will be corresponding to the seats. They can know who you are.
Yes,
that's basically
right. All
it's going to do for you.
And for that, they had your coat. They'd be like, look for the giant fluorescent coat. That's Mary under there. To talk about Daisy's job for a second, this feels like many, many different dangers stacked together.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of amazing to watch tree fallers, as they're called in Canada. I usually lumberjack, is that a U.S. term? They don't say lumberjack there. They say fallers. But anyway, those guys who cut down trees, the way they go up, they've got spikes on their sides of their boots, and they, you know, spike in. That's how they, you know, get purchased on the tree. And they've just got a lot, like a piece of rope that's around the trunk of the tree, so that, you know, you spike in with your feet, and then you pull your body close to the tree, which makes the rope slack, and then you flip it up another, you know, few feet, and then you go up with your feet. You're really only held by your feet. It's like if you drop that rope, you're in trouble. It looks phenomenally frightening to me. And then there's like the guy down below who's going to send the drill up to you on a rope. You know, it's a saw. It's he's chainsawing in a little square box to stick the explosives in. You know, so there's this chainsaw going up, and one of the guy goes, he's actually a falling safety advisor. We had two falling safety advisors on site, and he goes, yeah, there's probably a special knot for this, but we're not going to do it. So the chainsaw's like going up, and, you know, it's like sawdust is spraying everywhere. Daisy's job is to go two-thirds of the way up the tree and then drill holes in a circle, maybe four holes, and then he's sticking two. They're not real sticks. They look like chocolate chip cookie dough. It's like explosives in there. And, you know, we're how many feet? A couple hundred feet back. I can't remember how far.
Okay, so Daisy comes down. Everyone gets a few hundred feet away. What's the moment? Like, who presses the button? And then what is it? Yeah, what's the sound you hear?
Yeah, the stomper. Somebody gets to do the stomper. And it's just a small metal, kind of like what you push to cross a street, you know, to change this traffic light. It's like that. And you just stomp on it with your boot. And that sends this kind of shockwave down the shock. Is it called a shock tube? I can't remember what it's called. But anyway, and almost instantaneously, first of all, it's this boom of the explosive. And then like a couple of loud crashes because the tree, as it's coming down, takes out a few big branches of other trees on the way down. And then boom, when the whole thing hits the ground. So it's like three stages of fabulous big noise, which plus all of the people around whooping and going, whoo! Because it is, I don't know, some basic human thing to scream with delight when something's blown up. This is embarrassing, and I don't know if I include this detail in the book, but the first time I did the stomper, I hit it kind of on the side and it didn't go. And that's embarrassing because there's a lot of buildup. There's so much buildup to this moment. And plus they do like the air, there's that air horn, and they do it like 12 times to let everybody know, stay clear, and they count down, and then they're like, boom, it doesn't go. So that was really pathetic.
Did they do the air horn again? Did you have to like go through the whole thing?
We had to do it all. It was humiliating.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
I know.
I'm curious, are people... you know, people love trees. I love trees. This is a story about exploding them. Does this practice bother people? Is it like controversial?
There are people who, there have at times been people protesting. Daisy told me about that. Is people like he tried to, he said, you know, I'm just going to try to explain to these folks? I mean, because, you know, you hear they explode trees and you think that's horrible. These are old trees and they're blowing them up. But when you explain to them, this is a dead tree. This is a dead spongy.
Yeah.
It's we're trying to make it safe while it's in this dead phase here before it's dead fallen on top of somebody. So she tries to explain because it's not intuitive. You know, you hear the explosions and you hear this crash and you think, oh my God, they're blowing up these beautiful old growth trees. And so he tried to explain it to somebody and he said, I don't do this anymore because I went up to this woman and I explained it to her and she said, we think the trees know when it's their time to fall. I'm like, no, they don't. It's the wind. It's the rot in the tree. It's a combination of factors. You're just stepping in to try to make that place safe. So, but he's like, she didn't get it. And I give up. So,
yes,
but there are people who dislike it. And I get it. You're blowing up a tree. People love trees, especially big, beautiful, old trees. People love them. There's an emotional connection. I get that.
You know, after working on this book and sort of taking this, you know, again, like we're talking about trees, but in general, people have this very sort of wholesome thought about nature, like it's natural, you know, and you wrote this whole book that's sort of like, yeah, it's natural, but it doesn't mean it can't kill you in 10 different ways.
Yes.
Did you sort of look at trees or pine cones or plants sort of differently after working on Fuzz?
Well, when I was working on the book, I came across, because I got interested in the whole idea of, I mean, trees, because they can't run away and they can't attack, they don't have teeth and claws, they have to protect themselves in kind of quiet, sinister ways like that, like poison is a good one. And I came across, you know, there's all these things like the federal noxious weed list. They're sort of like the FBI's most wanted list of toxic plants. And there's something called the rosary pea. And it's this little, it's this beautiful kind. It looks like a yin and yang, red and black, a little bean. And I have a couple of them. I got them in the rainforest in Trinidad, I think it was, years and years ago, these beautiful little beans. And they were on my desk and they're just sitting on my desk. And they contain abrin, which is one of the deadliest toxins. And yeah, I'm like, oh my God, like the grandkids, I mean, they come over, they could have like eaten that sucker. Whoa. So I did have this set. And then I looked at the, you know, I don't know if it wasn't the noxious weed list, but it was some list of highly poisonous common plants. And they're like, eight of them were either growing in my yard or had been planted in the past couple of years. I mean, plants are, it's not just the rare, like the rosary pea or the one that gives you ricin, the other bean,
the castor bean.
It's not a rare thing. Plants are like, don't with me. I will get you.
I remember when I was a kid, not even that, I was maybe 11 or 12, I realized that if you cut open the seeds of an apple, they have a little thing in them and they have a nice kind of a nutty taste. And I would like eat some of them sometimes. And I found out later that the nutty taste is cyanide.
Yes.
That's the taste I'm tasting. And I was like, oh, like an apple? Yeah. Trees are not to be trusted, these things.
No,
they're quite wily.
And there's like the school where my grandkids go, there's like sour grass, you know, it's oxalis, I think. And they like, oh, this, you can actually eat this nice plant. I'm like, you know what? It's probably not a good idea to encourage little kids to take plants and stuff them in their mouth. Because I mean, they were like, oh, what about this, Oma? Can I eat? I'm like, no.
Not that one. Not the foxglove. Yeah.
Exactly. Yikes. Because they're, you know, they're plants. You know, you just think, oh, they're so sweet and benign, and I don't know. I mean, they got to do something to stay safe.
Totally. Well, as always, a delightful, really fun conversation. I'm jealous of your experience blowing off the top of this tree. What a crazy wild thing to have gone and done. And if you haven't read it, you should go and buy yourself a copy of Fuzz: When Nature Breaks the Law. It's Mary Roach's latest book. Thanks, Mary. Thank you for talking to us.
Oh, thank you so much, Dylan. It was always so much fun.
Our podcast is a co-production of Atlas Obscura and Stitcher Studios. This episode was produced by
Amanda McGowan,
Julia Russo.
The production team includes
Doug Baldinger,
Chris Naka,
Camille Stanley,
Manolo Morales,
Baudelaire,
Gabby Gladney,
Johanna Mayer.
Our technical director is
Casey Holford.
This episode was mixed by
Luce Fleming.
If you want to learn more, be sure to visit atlasobscura.com. There is a link in the episode description. And our theme and end credit music is by Sam Tyndall. I'm Dylan Thuris, wishing you all the wonder in the world. I will see you next time.
Hi, it's Martha Stewart. You know, I spend a lot of time thinking about dirt. At 3 a.m., at all hours of the day, really. What people don't know is that not all dirt is the same. You need dirt with the right kind of nutrients. New Miracle-Gro organic raised bed and garden soil is so dense, so full of nutrient-rich, high-quality ingredients. Miracle-Gro is simply the best.
The world isn't wide enough for those with an insatiable desire for discovery. The all-new 2024 Lincoln Nautilus Hybrid SUV offers the power and freedom to explore further and deeper than ever before. Intuitive, smart features ensure that you're always connected to the road ahead. Inside, a thoughtfully designed cabin immerses you in a universe that is all your own. The larger-than-life panoramic display spans the entire width of the cabin. It's customizable and interactive. Drivers can even personalize their backgrounds with a series of nature-inspired themes. This vehicle signals the arrival of an exciting new chapter for Lincoln. Discover more about the 2024 Lincoln Nautilus at Lincoln.com.